Krishna, Te Bhakti Vedanta, Swamini, Tanamani, Namaste, Sarasvati, Devi, Gurumani, Chamani, Nivishesha, Sanyavai, Paschate, De Satanani, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, 50th anniversary of the inauguration of ISKCON Ki Jai, 51st anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America Ki Jai. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Good evening, thank you for letting me say something about Bhagavad Gita related to the observation, which is just a few days ago officially, of Srila Prabhupada's arrival in America. And I hope I can be of some service. So the, let's see, I think I had some introductory remarks. First thing is finding glasses. So I have been asked to include some idea or some ideas commemorating Srila Prabhupada's arrival in the USA. We're very close to the date. And we'll try to relate this event to Krishna's instructions, at least one or two instructions, in the Bhagavad Gita, which implies the, where Prabhupada is, gives us some indication of the great challenge that he faced when he came to the West. There are 12 purposes of studying the Shastra, the scriptures, and one of them is very apropos. It's called the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. So we'll try to get some sense of what Srila Prabhupada had to contend with. His Guru Maharaj, this one quote where he said, "You preach this Bhagavad Gita in English, it will be good for you and it will be good for everyone that you meet." Did I get that right, more or less? Did you hear, have you heard that one? Yeah.
I heard that.
Just preach.
Yeah.
Preach. Preach Krishna consciousness. In 1995, His Holiness Chivakram Swami wrote a simple, poetic Vyasa Puja homage to Srila Prabhupada, which included the following lines. "The devotee of the Lord is even kinder than the Lord. And in your person it was clearly seen that was that this was fact indeed. For in old age you dared to come," and he writes here, "to the land of the setting sun, where ignorance and passion were held in fashion, and Maya ruled all as she pleased. And you wrote a wonderful poem, and you arrived on the western shore, which revealed your sweet and meek nature, your love for the Lord, and more. Then you struggled alone for a year and lived with the hippies without fear." I could say something about that. "So that ISKCON could be founded, a house for all the world, with the spirit of a youth and the patience of a saint. You worked tirelessly and selflessly to see your ISKCON grow, and you translated your books in the middle of the night just to give vision to those without sight." There's more to it, but I thought that was the most relevant to the occasion that we're observing of Prabhupada's arrival in America. We'll try to keep in mind especially that the devotee of the Lord, as he writes and is sometimes stated, maybe Srila Prabhupada utter these words, that the devotee of the Lord is even kinder than the Lord. Of course, the wonderful poem refers to the Markini Bhagavat Dharma when the Jaladut briefly docked in Boston Harbor. Of course, that poem alone reveals so much of Srila Prabhupada's mood and mission. We could, most of us are familiar, if we don't have it all memorized, but we're familiar with some of the high points. Srila Prabhupada's total dependence on Krishna and his confidence, not in himself, but confident of how Krishna will work through him. What is that? Not chao, not chao, not chao. If you brought me here to dance, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. As you write, that's towards the end of the poem. And throughout the poem, Srila Prabhupada is just recognizing this is a daunting task. The modes of nature are so heavy here. You're seeing the Boston Harbor skyline there. What to speak of when he gets to New York? What to speak of the hippies? It was a daunting task. And yet, that was the instruction of his spiritual master. So he somehow made it to America. It was, you all know, the great saga involved. Jaladut, heart attacks, etc. He gets to Boston and he writes this wonderful poem. And there is actually a certain confidence in that he says, okay, they've given me the name Bhaktivedanta, which Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivedanta, related. And now you can make this name Bhaktivedanta realized. You can bring out the purport of this name Bhaktivedanta. He's completely depending on Krishna. And Prabhupada said, I have no qualification, I have no knowledge, I have no anything. But what was the one thing that Prabhupada acknowledged that he had? Yes, Mataji? Strong faith, he said. Strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. A very dear departed godbrother, Jayananda Prabhu, one of his many sutras, was, you got to have faith in the name. You got to have faith in the name. What else do we have? So one Gita verse, and actually it's a whole section of Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter. It's up there. We could just chant it one time all together. How does it begin? Ya idam paramam guya? No, ya idam. 1867? Oh, idam te. Okay, there you go. Idam te, let's chant all together. Idam te na tapaskaya na bhaktaya kadachana na chashushu shave vacham na chamam yobhyasu yati. Do you have the translation up there now? Okay. I guess I should read it. It's 1867, Perfection of Renunciation. This confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. I'll read a little from the purport. Persons who have not undergone the austerities of the religious process, who have never attempted devotional service in Krishna consciousness, who have not tended to a pure devotee, in other words, not served a pure devotee, and especially those who are conscious of Krishna only as an historical personality, or who are envious of the greatness of Krishna, should not be told this most confidential part of knowledge. It is, however, sometimes found that even demoniac persons who are envious of Krishna, worshipping Krishna a different way, take to the profession of explaining Bhagavad Gita in a different way to make business. But anyone who desires actually to understand Krishna must avoid such commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. Actually, the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is not understandable to those who are sensuous. In other words, not tapaskaya, they're not austere. And even if one is not sensuous, but he's not strictly following the disciplines enjoined in the Vedic scripture, he's not a devotee, I guess I'm reading the whole purport, he also cannot understand Krishna. And even when one poses himself as a devotee of Krishna, but is not engaged in Krishna conscious activities, he also cannot understand Krishna. Srila Prabhupada is reiterating all the prohibitions mentioned in the Sanskrit. There are many persons who envy Krishna because he has explained in Bhagavad Gita that he is the supreme and that nothing is above or equal to him. There are many persons who are envious of Krishna. Such persons should not be told of Bhagavad Gita, for they cannot understand. There is no possibility of faithless persons understanding Bhagavad Gita and Krishna. Without understanding Krishna from the authority of a pure devotee, one should not try to comment on Bhagavad Gita. Now keep in mind that this verse, they say, well, why is he picking this verse? Well, how does it relate to the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada? Well, if we take the whole section, the Krishna is revealing the most confidential knowledge, Manmana Bhagavad Bhakto, and then Sarvadharman Parichaja, those two key verses in Bhagavad Gita, along with 934. And then, although he was very happy to reveal this supreme knowledge, Shinu me paramam vacha, listen to my supreme word, to Arjuna, because Arjuna was worthy. But then he's making a qualifying that not everyone can hear this, not allowed. So this, and then it goes on, it's kind of like Krishna saying, hurry up and slow down, or slow down and then hurry up. Because he's saying that you can't just go and explain. Now, one thing I want to mention, and I did a whole little, picking out quotes from this series of verses, and I'm not going to go into the detail, but what it came out, I mean, the bottom line was that it appears that when I first read it, I thought, well, actually, it's not a problem, because Krishna is just talking about what's described as guhyatamam. There's guhyam, guhyataram, and guhyatamam. There's confidential, which one way of understanding is that we're not these bodies. Actually, in the modern world, especially the Western world, it's like quite a surprise. It's, aham brahmasmi, I'm just far out. And then more confidential, in a general sense, we can say it's knowledge of super soul. But the most confidential is Bhagavan, knowledge of Krishna, and expanding that into bhakti, into the relationship between the living entity and Krishna. So when I first read this, I said, well, it's all right. It's just Krishna's not really prohibiting the preaching of Bhagavad Gita. He's just prohibiting this part of it, this guhyatamam, this most confidential knowledge, manmana bhagavad bhaktaro, sarvadharma preachers. And it makes sense if people says just give up all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. People may not understand that so easily. It's very confidential. But actually, if we read, I'm not going to go picking out the quotes here, but if we read in this verse and some of the verses that follow, it seems like the scale of how to understand this is weighed in favor that it's not only this this most confidential part, but it's the whole Bhagavad Gita, because the whole Bhagavad Gita means Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you can't really even get to first base in understanding the Bhagavad Gita if you're not accepting Krishna, what to speak of the instructions of Krishna. So, in one sense, Krishna is saying, slow down, don't preach the Bhagavad Gita, only to those who have all those qualifications, even if you're a devotee, but you're not a practicing devotee. And there is that category. You don't want to say, oh, he's not a devotee, but Krishna says it's going to be really tough for them to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially the most confidential part, but even in general, Bhagavad Gita. If they're a devotee, but they're not practicing, then cha shushu shave. And then, if you're not austere, at least the four regular principles, and if we're not engaged in devotional service, if we're not devotee. And the worst is, if one is envious of me, then that's the worst. That really disqualifies one. And Prabhupada warns that we shouldn't hear from versions or editions of Bhagavad Gita, which are written by those who want to have Bhagavad Gita minus Krishna. What kind of Bhagavad Gita is that? So Krishna's putting this restraint, but then it goes on, and he'll go on to extol or glorify the greatness of those who actually do preach Bhagavad Gita. So how does it relate to Srila Prabhupada? He says in the purports, he writes that we see that devotees have open classes. We have open classes on Bhagavad Gita. Everyone could come. And Prabhupada goes on to say, even a sinful, even in chapter 4 in Bhagavad Gita, after the Tadvidi Panipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya verse about approaching the spiritual master to gain knowledge, right after that, Krishna says that, how does it begin? The next one is, after the 434, the 435. Where does it start? Yeah, that's how it ends. And it starts by saying that when you have gotten this knowledge from a selfless, you'll never fall again into such illusion. Then you'll know that all beings are in me and are mine. And then Krishna goes on to say that api ched asi pape bhya sarve bhya papakritama sarva jana plavena eva vijinam santarishasi. Even if you're considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, if you're situated on the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to overcome, surpass the ocean of miseries. So how is that going to happen if we don't know Bhagavad Gita philosophy? And Bhagavad Gita philosophy is sambandha jnana. It's absolutely necessary. Even for chanting the holy names, sambandha jnana is absolutely essential. You can chant and chant and chant, but if we have the wrong philosophy, we can't even qualify as getting a reflection of the holy name or getting a shadow of the holy name. So this is the point that Srila Prabhupada, just like, say, right now, I have a challenge. Some of you, like Dravida Prabhu, Dasaras Sutta Prabhu, or to speak of Pran Govinda Prabhu, we have some very, very erudite, very learned, practically demigods here. And so I have to look up to them. And of course, I'm not supposed to look down at anyone. I'm supposed to offer respect even to an ant. But the point is that it's like a one-room schoolhouse. We have kids. We have a few here for the first time, perhaps. I think one or two. And it's quite a mixed bag, so to speak. Now, what to speak of Srila Prabhupada? There's one book that was mostly written by Kamal Krishna Goswami and was completed by Satyaraj and Garuda Prabhus, maybe some others help. And it was his PhD doctoral thesis. And you know the title of it? It's called Bhakti, a living religion. A living theology of Bhakti Yoga. And in that book, frankly, the whole book is just what we're trying to say something about this evening, is the challenge that Srila Prabhupada had. The mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada was, you know, exponentially more difficult than just what we're seeing, a microcosm here in this room, in this temple room. He had Smartha Brahmanas in the background. He had all kinds of Sahajiyas there from India. And then the Western world is also full of voidism, impersonalism and voidism. And then there was, interestingly enough, the hippies proved to be the most receptive audience, because despite all their, what's the proper pronunciation? Inebrieties? Or inebrieties, all right. Inebrieties. I'm always learning when I associate with Jivita Prabhu. Inebrieties, as Satsrupa Maharaj has pointed out in his work on the history of Prabhupada Lilamrita, that they were looking for a whole different consciousness. So anyway, not to get into the analysis of the hippies, but I could certainly attest to the fact that we were one of another aspect of the challenge. In other words, our goal was to transcend. Our goal was to, everyone, we had, what was it, Gurdjieff and Uspensky and this one and that one, whether it was Bob Dylan or the Beatles or Allen Ginsberg, we had so many leaders, Jerry Rubin, Abby Hoffman, Alan Watts was a big influence. Then we had people like Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who came from Tibet, with Tibetan Buddhism, and he would be drinking sake while he was sitting on the Vyasasan. And his disciples, I said, why is your guru doing that? His face is turning bluish red. And he said, oh, sometimes Gurudev, master, even falls off the seat. And, you know, like, that's really great. He said, why does he do that? He's taking up the karma of the Americans. Seemed to be having a pretty good time doing it. Anyway, you had quite a hodgepodge of different so-called gurus. And so Srila Prabhupada came in the midst. And not only different gurus coming from the East, but in general, these cults were there. We published a pamphlet called Don't Lump Us In. That was another challenge. So in the West, it was so strange to Westerners that, you know, they considered it a new religion, a new cult. And in India, it was so revolutionary, in a sense, that they didn't recognize it as part of the Vedic or Hindu culture at the beginning. They even had this, was it a record album or something? Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, where they thought the Hare Krishnas were CIA assets, because they couldn't understand where we got the money. So they just assumed that we got it from the CIA or something like that. We're really having a tough time. So many challenges in India and around the world. And that book by Dhamal Krishna Goswami really, really shows that, I mean, I mentioned how we have different groups here, but the different groups that Prabhupada had to cater to, not cater to like kowtow to, but cater to in the sense of minister to, attend to. Just like Allen Ginsberg, he's saying, to come to the Lower East Side, what kindness, intelligence, and humility. A very nice praise of Srila Prabhupada's compassion to come down, not only from the spiritual world, but to come down from uptown, the uptown swamis. I went uptown, I visited, I mean, not on a personal level, but I attended a talk by Satchinandana Swami, not the ISKCON one, but the one with the big beard, who's a very, I think he's still around, a very expert in Hatha Yoga, and postures, and integral yoga society or something. And he spoke about vegetarianism, basically. Just about vegetarianism. It didn't get much further in that particular occasion. Anyway, there are so many examples. The Prabhupada came down from that uptown, down to the Lower East Side, and I had the good fortune of, as you say, I was like a sitting duck, living half a block away from Tompkins Square Park. And I was there in 1965. So at the right time in the right place, somehow. So despite my good fortune, I can't light a candle to most of you and how much you're repaying Srila Prabhupada for the matchless gifts that he's given us. But this is some idea of the mission, the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. So the sub theme here is this business of can you preach it or not? You know, in the Bhagavad Gita. But get back to that a little bit. And I mentioned that in the verses that follow, it's not only the most confidential knowledge with Prabhupada. Mentions the Bhagavad Gita as a whole, and yet Prabhupada preached the Bhagavad Gita like anything. So, in his first investment in 26 Second Avenue, we hear from Lilamrita, is one of those signboards with removable letters. I think they still use those. And one of his first announcements in the storefront window was, Bhagavad Gita as it is. And then the next line was, Krishna as he is. Now, I'm mentioning this because this is really upfront. I mean, this is really most magnanimous. Despite Krishna's restriction, he's going right into this nest of all kinds of people, but especially the confused, disoriented, and intoxicated hippies. And he's giving Bhagavad Gita as it is, and Krishna as he is. In one sense, you could say that those who are preaching wrongly Bhagavad Gita, and Bhagavad Gita as it isn't, that in one sense they're obeying Krishna's restriction here, because they're really not preaching Bhagavad Gita. So at least they get that. But Prabhupada was not going to be that well behaved, you can say. So he explains his apparent disregard, at least in his actual preaching of Krishna's rule, in this purport to the 71st verse of this chapter. I won't read the whole thing. It just says, in the 67th verse of this chapter, that's what we have up on the screen still, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are envious of the Lord. In other words, Bhagavad Gita is for the devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes a devotee of the Lord will hold open class. And in that class, not all the students are expected to be devotees. Why do such persons hold open class? And Prabhupada goes on to say that, well, they may not be devotee, but they may be innocent. But let's face it, you get all those different groups. And some of them were, you know, I think to a certain extent, I mean, I wasn't a complete demon, but I was a partial demon. And I was allowed, in fact, probably the umpteenth million time, I'll just mention that incident where I was potentially going to disrupt the whole class in Bhagavad Gita. I showed up at the front door and after being up all night, and I wasn't planning on attending actually Bhagavatam class. I just would bop in any time. And it happened to be 6:30 in the morning, and Bhagavatam class was going on, and Swamiji was sitting giving class, and I showed up on the door, and I looked like a monster, and I was actually under the influence. And Srila Prabhupada looked at me, and he said, Lon, did you take LSD? And I said, no, Swamiji. I wasn't exactly lying, because I didn't take it the day before, but I was still under the influence. Sometimes that happens. Be careful. Don't mess around with it. And what happened? This is the great magnanimity that not only is he preaching Bhagavad Gita to who knows what's going on in the audience and what's going on in their heads and how they're feeling and all kinds of misconceptions that they have, even somewhat the maniac, but this crazy nutcase comes and was and could even disrupt the whole class, even externally. And Srila Prabhupada just sat there and patiently observed as this Bhaktalan started walking unevenly and placing myself right at his lotus feet in front of him, and then just continued the quest. Now, this is the kind of mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. How could I possibly be here today, or even be alive, if Prabhupada were less than unlimitedly merciful? You can say it like that. In the next verse, he says, any person fortunate enough to hear these teachings from Krishna, or his bona fide spiritual representative, is sure to become a liberated person, get out of the darkness of ignorance. Thus, a pure devotee of the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from all sinful reactions and become a devotee of the Lord. Now, one other thing I wanted to share was in the Mukunda Mala Stotra, the first six verses were translated and commented on by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, but all the other verses by, was it Satsvrut Maharaj? So in one of those verses, in verse mantra 41, the commentary, it was a team of Satsvarupa Das Goswami and Gopi Puranadana Prabhu. Dravida, did you participate in that one? And you were the English editor. So. Who's your what? Oh, this is history present before us. You were there, and he's here now also. I'm a little bit sort of like a museum exhibit, still walking and talking and everything. So, this is what was written. That which is of such inestimable value, the mantra composed of the names of God, should not be kept secret. People should not be denied access to it, even if they seem unqualified. Once, the Acharya, Ramanuja, and some of you know where this is going, was given a secret mantra by his guru, who told him that revealing it would be detrimental to his spiritual advancement. But Ramanuja loudly chanted the potent mantra and taught it to the people in general. I remember reading, he got up on a balcony, he just announced it. Yeah, that comes up now. When his guru asked him why he had done this, Ramanuja said that if the mantra was beneficial, then he wished to give it to everyone, even at the risk of going to hell. This mood is reflected in Lord Chaitanya and his Sankirtan movement. Quote, not considering who asked for it and who did not, and who is fit and who is unfit to receive it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributed the fruit of devotional service. That would be CC Adi Lila 9.29, Adi Chapter 9. I got 29 and 36 here, so I can't both be right. It's one of those two numbers. 29, okay. So regarding Srila Prabhupada's mood and mission, we're so grateful that he actually took up the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati and did in fact make his mission his heart and soul. We hear about that that commentary that was it Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that the 241, and this is very famous that that Yavasyatmika Buddhi Keha Kuru Nandana, the verse where those whose intelligence is resolute, they're single-minded in purpose. Their intelligence is one. It's Vyavasyatmika Buddhi Eka. So it's Eka Buddhi. Eka Buddhi. They have one mind, one intelligence. Actually, Arjuna asked Krishna, he says, you're talking two things, talk one thing. I want to know one thing. I have to get one answer. I have to know what is best for me. So those who are actually Krishna conscious, they know what is best for them. Their intelligence is one, as opposed to the many-branched intelligence of those who are irresolute. And then in the Prabhupada, of course, has his purport, but historically, it's understood that Srila Prabhupada was particularly inspired by the commentary by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, where he says that the disciple takes the order of his spiritual master as his heart and soul. In other words, that's his single-minded intelligence, is the order of the spiritual master. And we can see how magnificently and in an unprecedented, to an unprecedented degree, Srila Prabhupada took up the order, the specific order. He ordered it at the beginning, was it 1923, something like that? He took it up at the very, very first instruction, practically the very last instruction, aside from, if you get money, print books. Prabhupada did not slouch on that one, that's for sure. And to go and preach in English in the Western world. So Prabhupada, that was his order from his guru, his specific duty that he had to perform. And of course, I mean, how can anyone describe the intensity, the degree, the determination, the focus, the single-mindedness by which Srila Prabhupada fulfilled that order, even when it looked like it wasn't going to be so successful. So we should be very aware of these things and always go on increasing the depth of our gratitude and even our understanding, to the extent we can understand, the stature of Srila Prabhupada as a Vaishnava. I mean, I don't want to become a fanatic, you know, but who can place a limit on Srila Prabhupada's? Srila Prabhupada is, I think, Tamal Krishna Goswami, he kind of chastised his godbrother, said Prabhupada didn't want to be called Jagat Guru, because in India sometimes anyone could ride on an elephant and maybe go to the next village and he'd proclaim himself to be Jagat Guru. So he didn't want to be, you know, to be misunderstood as that kind of Jagat Guru. But we, my experience was that in Vrindavan, they didn't like it. In Mayapur, you can get away with it. But my tendency is to, you know, saying, Jaya Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada, Jaya Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada. Remember, Ramanuja disobeyed the order of his spiritual master. So this little one I could disobey also. We understand the time and circumstances. So even though we may not be as austere as Krishna wanted us to be to understand Bhagavad Gita, we may not be as completely engaged in devotional service as we're supposed to be, and hopefully we're not guilty of being envious of Krishna, or who knows, there may be some residual, little bits of envy still there. I hope it's not more than a bit. But still, we're hearing Bhagavad Gita, and we're even getting a chance to discuss it. So thank you for your kind attention, Srila Prabhupada's mercy. If anyone would like to ask a question or make a comment at this point. Javita Prabhu. Microphone.
Hare Krishna. So just one comment. The whole theme seems to be that Srila Prabhupada was paramount among the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in taking risks to fulfill the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta and Lord Chaitanya. I remember there's a passage, I listen to a lecture every day, you know, Prabhupada is, maybe it was Morning Walk, and he's in Calcutta, and there's a big monument, I've never seen it, the Queen Victoria, the big building there. And Prabhupada said he climbed it as a kid. You know, he climbed to the top as a 7-year-old or 8-year-old. You know. And one of the devotees on the walk said, Prabhupada, you were so brave. And Prabhupada said, yes, and I'm still brave, you know, coming to the West and preaching to you guys. And, you know, I mean, he didn't say it like that, but that's what he said. And you can see, you know, it was like incredible. I just contemplate, because now is, you know, the time, the 50th anniversary of his arrival, and of what he went through to not just come, but the preliminaries, you know, writing the Bhagavatam, you know, he didn't feel he could come until then, getting the tea form and all the whole thing that's outlined in that first volume of the Ramayana. And, you know, the determination, as you say, the one point of determination. But then the risk, you know, getting on that boat, no money, no followers, weak, you know, health, and very dangerous along the way. And then he comes there. I didn't know if he'll go left or right. You know, so all along the way, and as you say, you know, where to preach to, uptown or downtown, you know. Finally, Krishna brought him down and right in the middle at the right time, you know, with the right audience. So he continued to take risks constantly, and that's his great glory. You know, he can risk, as you say, disobeying Krishna's injunction here, you know, and many others for us.
Well, we can have a misunderstanding and you can say, well, that wasn't so. Prabhupada was so depending on Krishna. He even said, those are my happiest days. Because I had no one to depend on except Krishna. He didn't have any men or money. You know, only Krishna to depend on. So how could he be happy? Because Srila Prabhupada was so Krishna conscious, so with Krishna, so in touch with Krishna. So when could say, so, you know, it may look like it was tough, but actually it was a piece of cake for Prabhupada. But actually it's not like that. It's not like a devotee doesn't feel, is incapable of feeling pain. It's even described that Jad Bharat, actually felt pained when Maharaj Rahukana was, you know, berating him, insulting him. And it didn't imply that he was only pained because, you know, here's a fallen condition soul and I hate to see him so stupid and so ignorant. It seemed like it was a conventional kind of feeling insulted. And Prabhupada, he got that big needle in his spine. They had to take a spinal tap. I'm not going to ask if anyone here had a spinal tap, but just by reading about it, you get a sense of how painful that is. And the devotees were not allowed to go into the room where the procedure was. And when they came out, when Prabhupada came out, they said, Swamiji, it must have been so painful. And Prabhupada said, we are tolerant. We are tolerant. And it wasn't only just physical, and it wasn't only just, you know, in terms of the activity, but also psychologically, who can deal with that? You know, even very advanced, exalted Vaishnavas, it's hard to picture them at 26 Second Avenue or even before. It's hard to picture them, you know, going through even a tenth of what Prabhupada was subjected to, and yet Prabhupada would just be fixed. And some of us, I mean, I didn't join until 75, and as Dravida pointed out, was it this morning or yesterday morning, you pointed out how joining meant you moving a temple. So in that sense, I didn't join. I was what we call it congregation member at that time. With a certain plausibility, we were called fringies. So he called me a fringy. He was a fringy. Well, I was in transition. The devotees helped me dovetail my karmic activities. But I had the good fortune to be part of that Leela. I mean, I could say I was like a prop, but I was part of the Leela in the sense, it's embarrassing to admit it, but I was one of those challenges. You know, probably had so many challenges, you know, a little footnote in history, but I was one of those challenges. I have a few tales to tell, which not just to embarrass myself, but to glorify Srila Prabhupada. How he was so tolerant and so transcendentally brilliant, transcendentally genius, and how to deal with someone who no one else could deal with, not even my own material father at all. That's why the third volume of Prabhupada Lilamrita is called Only He Can Lead Them, right? Only He Can Lead Them. Even the police didn't know what to do with us. I mean, it was just a big problem. We went it's just about time now. We went to Buffalo University. We just take over the buildings. In many parts of the country, we just take over the buildings. Thousands of hippies come in. They sit down. They start breaking all the regular principles and even the legal ones. And no one knew what do we do? What are we supposed to do? a lot of history there. So only he could lead them. And not just lead them to become decent citizens of an indecent culture, but to lead them back to home, back to Godhead. So I guess I better stop now. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Jagadguru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you. And thank you for having me as your guest here. And